People talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping all the wars we fight, griping about the great things on the people. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me, running down with life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it, let the song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Guy who claims he just don't believe the fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They learn our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking. If you don't love it, leave it. This song I'm singing be a warning. You run down my country, man. You walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in the fog of Jack Key. If you don't love it, leave it. Running down my country, man, you walking on the fight beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fight inside of me. And that's the name of this program, HeroicResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And, of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, there is just so much happening. some very, very much happening. Here's an item from a Christian group. It's rather frightening because of the absolute overkill, because a member of the Canadian Armed Forces, who apparently has now been dismissed, has been visiting some websites that a Jewish watchdog group does not like. And this is from Christians for Truth. The RCMP raided the rural Manitoba house of an Army reservist who suspected of frequenting a survivalist website that advocated preparedness for possible upcoming civil disturbance. Now, what's the wrong with that? Quote, no charges have been laid against Master Corporal Patrick Matthews, a member of the Winnipeg-based 38th Canadian Brigade Group, but both RCMP and the military are investigating his alleged ties to The Base, an organization that promotes hate. Well, this is a newspaper report, not what the Christian group says. Mounties descended on Matthews' home in the rural town of Beausejour, about 30 miles east of Winnipeg, late on Monday, ordering him out of his house. Imagine. In a video of the raid posted to Facebook a short time later, a voice can be heard saying, Patrick Matthews, we have a search warrant for this residence. You can exit the back door with your hands in the air. A law-abiding citizen. RCMP said later they searched the house in Beausejour and seized a number of firearms, but no one is in custody at the time. So in other words, there were no violations. Sarah Lockhart, who lives across the street, said dozens of police officers and a tactical team were at the home across from hers around 10:30 p.m. Central Time. He came out quietly, she said. It took them about 5 minutes to get rid of him. The Department of National Defense is investigating claims that Matthews, an eight-year member of the 38th Canadian Brigade Group, is involved in a neo-Nazi group. If the allegations are confirmed, Matthews could be forced to undergo counseling, in other words, political reindoctrination, or lose his job, among other possible consequences, said Brigade Commander Colonel Gwen Bork. Quote, it's completely unacceptable for Canadian Armed Forces members to participate in any activity or have any membership in a group organization that the members know or should know or should have known. Yeah, this is Colonel Gwen Bork. Our country's safe, known to have connected to criminal activities, Bork said. Every soldier must respect the dignity of all persons at all times. Terrorists? Details of Matthews' alleged activities were originally revealed by the Winnipeg Free Press, whose reporter went undercover posing as a white nationalist wishing to join the group. According to the reports, Matthews has training with explosives. Bork acknowledged Matthews, as a combat engineer, has very rudimentary explosives training that involved basic understanding of demolitions. Bork also stressed that Matthews would only have access to explosives as part of sanctioned military exercises. She describes his master corporal rank as a junior position within the armed forces. So he's a nobody, but we'll try to get rid of him anyway. But said he would have received leadership training and been in charge of a section of reserve soldiers. Bernie Farber, chairman of the Canadian Anti-Hate Network, described the base as an extreme right-wing North American hate organization. It focused on growing its members through recruitment and training for violence, he said. They consider the alt-right to be not extreme enough. They are almost like a neo-Nazi death cult, says Farber. Well, Farber's being seen Nazis under every bed for the last 40 years. It brought in his guilt. The CEO of the old Canadian Jewish Congress, that's now defunct. It morphed into the Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs. He's gone on to other things now. He's now the chair thingy of the Canadian Anti-Hate Network. It isn't clear how many people belong to the group in Canada, Farber said, but the size of the group isn't necessarily the most important detail. So, this is Canadian Anti-Hate Network is another largely Jewish anti-free speech group telling you what you can and cannot do. Takes only one or two very committed ultra-violent individuals to create all sorts of havoc, said Farber. One of the base's stated goals is for members to get into the military in order to receive training and then spread that to others in their group, according to Evan Balgord, executive director of the Canadian Anti-Hate Network. He said the base idolizes mass killers and pledges to carry out terrorist attacks to accelerate what they see as the coming race war. No evidence of that. The Canadian military criminal intelligence section tracked incidents of racism and white supremacy within the Canadian Armed Forces from 2013 to 2018. Less than 1% of the military population were engaged in racist or hate-motivated activities, according to the military police. Punishment for this kind of behavior ranges from counseling to career consequences, including dismissal. The military said 7 administrative reviews are being conducted related to extremism and racism, which has led to 2 individuals being released from the armed forces. So Matthews was arrested but committed no crime, except perhaps a thought crime, which apparently is treated far more seriously than an actual crime with an actual victim. When police go to arrest a rape suspect, do they surround his house with a SWAT team comprised of dozens of tactical warfare experts, need we ask? Keep in mind that everything being alleged about this hate group comes to us from a self-appointed Jewish expert on hate. Nowhere is there any attempt to be fair-minded about this group and see it in a more reasonable way. This group is obviously not preparing to instigate violence. Rather, it's preparing to defend themselves and their families against anti-white violence perpetrated by the Bolsheviks who occupy the Comintern in Ottawa. Those like Matthews who oppose the destruction of Canada and the replacement of those who built it are dangerous enemies of the people, who will be diagnosed as mentally ill and given remedial counseling or re-education per the model of the former Soviet Gulag system. And our Prime Minister has said, the very concept of a nation founded by European settlers is offensive to me. Old stock white Canadians are an unpleasant relic and quite frankly replaceable, and we will replace them. That is, of course, the replacement agenda. Now, I have very little knowledge of what this group, the base is. I do know, though, that even though his place was raided in, you know, a super dramatic takedown, no charges were laid against Master Corporal Patrick Matthews, who apparently in the meantime has since gone missing. They're looking for him. Not clear exactly why, but he's now being treated as a missing person, you know, rather than as something criminal. The warfare at the establishment's behest against, you know, white supremacy in the Canadian Armed Forces. You know, and you have to remember, virtually nobody that I know of identifies themselves as a white supremacist. That's a term of abuse. So, what exactly are they trying to crack down on in the military? Well, probably on white nationalism. And, you know, of course, when they say, and racism. No, they won't tolerate racism. Racism, you know, could be something as mild as being concerned about the replacement of your people. That is if these are white people. Now, if you're concerned about the fate of, let's say, Native Indians or things like that, well, that's perfectly all right. But being concerned about the future of white people, well, that's really dangerous. That's dangerous stuff. I would say to any young person considering a career in the military, at the present time, why would you want to risk yourself? Why would you want to risk your life in the service of a foul, corrupt regime and a military leadership that is not on your side? Absolutely not on your side. A regime that is absolutely, fundamentally hostile to white people. And that's the reality. Absolutely, fundamentally hostile. Doesn't want you to have freedom of your opinions. Now, I certainly agree with being opposed to anybody involved in violence. Absolutely. I don't have an issue with that. But I do have a huge issue with trying to suppress people on their own time being involved in what might be called nationalist politics or being a member of a nationalist group. And I see this as part of the absolutely psycho ongoing attack by our cultural Marxist establishment on our people, and I would suggest that until the regime we can effect a regime change in Ottawa, I would suggest the armed forces aren't worth a second of your time. Why take any risks at all to serve such a corrupt regime? If Canada were under attack, that's a different matter. But our military exists largely at present time for peacekeeping missions. Now, you know, really, what should it matter? Which group of drug pushers or whatever is in charge of a country like Afghanistan. It shouldn't. Anyway, further example of the persecution of white people by white people. And, you know, this is what hurts so much, that these are our own people doing these things. Well, here's a Jewish professor from at the University of Calgary. This is David G.J. Berkison. He's a fellow of the Global Affairs Institute and Director Emeritus of the Center for Military Security and Strategic Studies at the University of Calgary. And this is a long piece he wrote in the Friday National Post. The rise of the AFD is a threat to Germany. Well, it's a strongly anti-immigration party. A strongly anti-invasion party. That's dangerous. That's dangerous. I won't go through this entire article, but as I've reported before, the AFD did extremely well in two state elections this past week in what used to be Eastern Germany, the state of Brandenburg, which is very close to the capital of Berlin, and Saxony. On Sunday, Germany's AFD Day, or Alternative for Germany, or Alternative for Deutschland in German, scored major advances in the state elections in Brandenburg and Saxony. The states are in East Germany, which sees itself as an underprivileged part of the country. AFD is also the official opposition in the German federal parliament, the Bundestag, and is present now in all 17 German states. So it's truly a national party. And then he goes into a bit of the background of the party, and it's since its founding, it's become the self-proclaimed heart of traditional German culture. It's avowedly anti-Muslim and anti-refugee, and contains within its ranks prominent populists who rage against what they see as the imminent disappearance of Germany as a white Christian state. This is, given the very low birth rate in Germany, this isn't a paranoid conspiracy theory. This is reality. With massive third world immigration and a very high third world birth rate among the immigrants, the replacement, within half a century, of the German white majority, is a real fear. Some of its leaders have collaborated with neo-Nazis. Well, what's a neo-Nazi? Well, neo-Nazi is someone who's proud of Germany's past and doesn't want to spend another 70 years wallowing in guilt. Collaborated with Holocaust deniers and avowed anti-Semites, while the party tries to maintain a line, not always a clear one, between its right-wing politics and Germany's Nazi past. Such claims are not sufficiently clear when measured against protestations that past German governments have made too much of Germany's Second World War guilt. But that's what this all comes down to. Germany must continue to wallow in guilt. Now, this is a control mechanism. I think there are forces, many of them Jewish, some not necessarily so, who are terrified of a proud, resurgent Germany. It's bad enough in their view that it's economically resurgent after the devastation of World War II. But if it was proud of itself, rather than wallowing in guilt, it might be truly a dangerous force to reckon with. And this is the way they see it. That's why they want to keep Germans guilty. Now, why should Germans born, let's say, 20 years ago, feel any guilt for something that happened that ended 74 years ago? There are hardly any Germans alive today who had any role in what happened up to 1945. I mean, just think about it. If you were 18 in 1945, you'd be 92 today. there are no commanders around anymore. There are no people who really made any significant decisions. Why would anybody at all in Germany feel guilty? Well, they shouldn't. And of course, it's largely a false narrative. You know, Hitler wanted to conquer the world, and he went around and he gassed 6 million Jews, and this narrative is quite frankly bullshit. Hitler wanted to secure Germany's position in Europe. He wanted to reunite predominantly German areas that had been hived off in the horrific settlement at Versailles in 1919. He wanted to rescue the German minority in Poland that was being terribly treated, in some cases massacred. Those were his goals. Conquering the world was not one of them. In fact, he repeatedly, as late as 1941, offered peace to Britain, even though Britain had declared war on Germany. He'd offered peace. He'd offered telling the British to keep your empire, you know, do your thing in the rest of the world, give me a free hand on the continent. He didn't want a war with Europe. He didn't want to conquer the world. If he didn't want to conquer the British Empire, well, why would he want to, you know, there's absolutely no evidence he wanted to conquer the world. Why should Germans continue to be guilty, feel guilty? They shouldn't. And most Germans, regardless of their political ideology in World War II, loyally rushed to the defense of the fatherland, as did people in North America once war was declared. Even the people who'd been America firsters or isolationists in the United States loyally joined the armed forces, rightly or wrongly. I'm not saying whether that's right or wrong. Why should people feel guilty today? Well, the only reason is to keep them under control. Bergeson goes on. Such claims are not sufficiently clear when measured against the protestations of past German governments. The Alternative for Germany, a number of the spokesmen have said, the past German governments have made too much over Germany's World War II guilt. One leader, Bjorn Hawk, for example, proclaimed that Germany is the only country that's installed a symbol of shame, the Holocaust Memorial, in the very heart of its capital.
What he needs is a symbol of their shame. Now, ironically, the same sort of symbol, there's talk of installing it right in the very close to the Parliament buildings in Britain. The Holocaust Memorial is very close to big government buildings in downtown Washington, but in those cases, Britain and the United States, at least, are not ostensibly not apologizing themselves for the Holocaust. Although it's a weird thing, we're all guilty. But what Bjorn Hawk is saying is, there's no other country that's installed right in the very heart of its capital a memorial of their own shame. The Syrians who come to us still have their Syria, but if we, through Syrians, lose our Germany, we will not have a homeland anymore, he says. Founding member Alexander Gauland has declared that the National Socialist era was but a speck of bird shit on German history. In other words, and this is, quite true, German history, depending on where you want to put your starting line. Well, let's say, without getting too archaeologically, anthropologically particular about it, let's say it starts, somewhere around 500 BC. So in 2,500 years of German history, there's a 12-year period of National Socialism. Must Germans reject and apologize for all of their history because of a 12-year period? Even if you buy into the what a horrible time that was. Uh, Bergson then concludes, modern Germans cannot and should not be blamed for the actions of their grandparents. Yeah, so let's drop the topic. Not quite. But Angela Merkel and all of her predecessors, from founding Chancellor Konrad Adenauer on down, have all accepted that Nazism was a terrible blight on German history, and the rebuilding a modern, rights-based, democratic society has to be based on facing the Nazi past. Why do you have to face them? Why must your past be denounced? Why not simply build a different modern world for different times? The alternative for Deutsch AfD, the alternative for Germany, does not share that basic value. And although it is highly unlikely that it will ever form a federal government in Germany, no legitimate German political party will join it in a coalition, the danger it poses to Germany and Europe cannot be underestimated. Yep, because here is a party that either is from the very top, or at least includes considerable elements of people who simply not bought into this soul-destroying guilt. And that's what it is. Soul-destroying guilt. Saying, you know, we're worthless. We always have something to apologize for. Why apologize? The past is the past. Let's move on. Have the Allies, for instance, apologize for the horrible treatment, especially the Americans and the French, gave to surrendered British soldiers, German soldiers after World War II. The million or so Germans who were starved to death, surrendered soldiers in Eisenhower's camps along the Rhine. They were not counted as POWs, because that's why in an amazing book 30 years ago, Canadian writer James Bach noticed this figure of other losses. That's what they were called. About a million German servicemen died after the war in these camps along the Rhine, but they weren't considered among prisoners of war, and they were simply allowed to starve to death, to die of treatable illnesses, dysentery, malnutrition, lack of water for almost a year. The death rate among young men in these outdoor camps with hardly any facilities and very little food was horrific. This was genocide. This really was a war crime. And if there had been justice at Nuremberg, people like Eisenhower would have hanged. But of course, Nuremberg had nothing to do with justice. It had everything to do with show trials and Allied vengeance. Canada has become so politically correct and sick that even a long-time traditional camp song that's been around for a long time is now the subject of controversy. Land of Silver Birch caused a huge stir at a school concert. To mark National Indigenous Peoples Day in June of this year, students in a primary school in Athabasca, Alberta, offered tobacco as a sign of respect to visiting musicians from Alexander First Nation, who played traditional drums as they described their instruments and traditions, and sang O Canada in Cree. As part of the ceremonies, the children heard another song too, almost as famous, but whose future in musical Canadiana is far less certain. Land of the Silver Birch is a folk song many generations of Canadian children have associated with camping and canoeing, and with its pastoral imagery of beaver and moose, and its rhythmic refrain, boom diddy ah da, or sometimes boom diddy boom boom. famous as a campfire song, Land of the Silver Birch is commonly sung as a round or to keep canoe paddles in time. But it is also written in the romanticized voice of an Indian traveler
who builds a wigwam unusually high on a rocky ledge. As such, when it is sung by middle-class white Canadian kids at summer camp, it is a textbook example of cultural appropriation, even of playing Indian. Now, I ask, what is wrong with that? Well, that's cultural appropriation. Well, the song actually was not written by an Indian, so how is it appropriating anybody's culture? It is a romanticized or an opinion about Indian paddling a canoe, building a wigwam. It's not pejorative. It's not making fun of Indians. It's not mocking them. In fact, if anything, it's admiring. Oh, you can't have that. You've got to have Indians talking about Indians. Well, it gets even worse. Now in Toronto, a defamation lawsuit brought by a school music teacher against her principal, vice principal, and school board has been slouching its toward trial through many months of failed mediation, chippy communications, and an unsuccessful jurisdictional challenge. Sooner or later, it is looking like a judge will have to consider whether Land of the Silver Birch is in fact racist and inappropriate. I love that word. Inappropriate. What does that mean? It means we disapprove of it. Well, what's inappropriate? I don't know. It's something you disapprove of. Anytime you can't define something, you know you're dealing with thought suppression. So, okay, this is inappropriate. The story, if anything, gets more ludicrous. So the judge will have to decide whether it's racist and inappropriate, as the principal of Toronto High Park Alternative School declared in an alleged libel of her music teacher, or whether that charge is an overblown case of political correctness. Violet Shearer, the music teacher, chose it, that's the song, The Land of the Silver Birch, for the grade 1-4 choir to sing at the 2016 spring concert, which was on the theme of home, and included pre-show music by Leonard Skinner, that's Sweet Home Alabama, and John Denver, Take Me Home Country Road. So the theme of home, okay. To say it did not go over well is an understatement. There had already been complaints from parents. One would later write to the Toronto Star about concerns children were being told to play Indian, an act that is historically racist and part of the process of colonization. That this parent's on crack cocaine. Playing it. What would be wrong with children trying to sympathetically identify with Indian children? Or Indian people, I should say. Oh, sympathetic, not to mock them. Not to make them out to be lesser or bad people. This is none. That is racist. They claim it's racist. It's part of colonization. How? Our kids are not taught any historical context, the complaining parent said. During the performance, some kids had hand drums and others were directed to make animal calls and accompaniment. Shearer is suing for $75,000 in damages for defamation and is demanding an unequivocal apology. She claims the principal and the vice principal had approved the program and were aware of the parents' complaints, but did not communicate them to her with enough urgency and basically set her up to offend parents. Quote, I believe that Nancy Keenan and Adita Tahirovich permitted me to conduct and perform the song in front of the audience while they had knowledge of a complaint having been made regarding the song Land of the Silver Birch, Shearer claims in court documents filed with the court. Soon after the concert, when Keenan and Tahirovich sent an apology email to parents, Shearer claims they knew she would be away from her school board email account because of a disability leave and unable to defend herself. The finger in the email points directly at me, she reclaimed. So, the principal and vice principal let her perform. Then, when the parent complaints continued to pour in,
they threw her to the wolves. They emailed out an apology, basically pointing the finger at her. I mean, talk about just incredible scumbaggery. The school took no action against Shearer, no reprimand or discipline, but it has refused to apologize to her and is vigorously defending the suit. It asked the judge to throw out the case because it ought to be a grievance. That failed, though, when the judge decided that the spring concert was an extracurricular, unpaid, involuntary activity. This gets into kind of a legal minutiae. The upshot is that the apology email might have to be judged as a possible libel, for which truth is a defense. No matter how it goes, it's easy to imagine a chilling effect on other music teachers. Quote, we would like to apologize for having students perform Land of the Silver Birch by Pauline Johnson in the performance of May 4th. The email reads, it has been brought to our attention that this song is inappropriate and is racist. Inappropriate. Well, there's that politically correct catch-all. That means they, or somebody they like, disapproves of it. It's racist, is it? To put the words in the mouths of an Indian about the celebrating the land, the silver birch, paddling a canoe, and so on, that's racist. What does racist mean? Does it mean recognizing that there are other races? Well, I guess on that basis, maybe it's racist. But racist is supposed to be a pejorative, something bad. You're saying something negative about another race. In fact, so screwed up and misguided is this apology email. They say it's written by Pauline Johnson. Now, here's the searing irony. Pauline Johnson was a proud Indian poet. But it gets even worse. Actually, she didn't write the poem. She didn't write the song, Song of the Silver Birch. I mean, Land of the Silver Birch. It's similar to something she wrote. Song of My Paddle. But she didn't write the song, Land of the Silver Birch. This is so typical of the cultural Marxist, politically correct people, especially in the education system today. I mean, not all are only are they completely out to lunch. Well, they don't even have the facts right. I mean, the basic facts. The song romanticizes First Nations people, those are Indians, says the email, while at the same time justifying colonization. It mentions the song's connection to scouting and summer camp and their stereotyping of native culture, such as the song's lines about building a wigwam on a rocky ledge. Well, what's stereotype? You mean the Indians didn't build wigwams? To be absolutely accurate, some tribes did and some didn't. It would depend on which tribes. Here we're probably talking of the woodland tribes of central Canada. Stereotype, what does that mean? It's a generalization. Well, what's wrong with that? A generalization is just that. It's true most of the time. It may not be true in individual cases. What's wrong with talking about Indians building a wigwam? I mean, it continues, while its lyrics are not overtly racist and are actually based on a poem written by an indigenous poet, Pauline Johnson, historical context of the song is racist. So, although the words aren't racist, well, it's still racist anyway. Pauline Johnson, while Indigenous, largely performed for non-Native audiences and performed in a style that was popular at the time, that depicted Native people and culture in romantic ways. While lamenting the dying out of Native civilization to be replaced by a superior Western civilization. That's what she believed. She celebrated her culture, which she saw largely as fading away. It says while she was a Native, she performed largely for non-Native audiences. She shouldn't be allowed to perform for non-Native audiences? Well, wouldn't that be racist? I mean, we are in the world of severe mental illness. I hope this teacher collects every penny that she's suing for and puts a serious humiliation on these politically correct cultural Marxist tyrants. Well, this is Paul Crum. You're on the funny side of me here on White Resistance Radio. Going to take my musical break. Going to go to the Buckaroo. Buck Owens brought the special type of country and western music from Bakersfield, California, to Nashville. He is a big star of the TV program, long-running TV program, Hee Haw, which mixed down-home country humor and country and western music. This is Buck Owens from Bakersfield, California, and a number of his more famous songs. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
Oh, the sun's gonna shine in my life once more. Love's gonna lift here again. Things are gonna be the way they were before. Love's gonna lift here again. Love's gonna lift here. Love's gonna lift here. Love's gonna lift. Francisco. I spent a night there in the canyon. Lived through this drunk man in my jail cell. Took $15 from that man. Left him my watch in my old house key. Don't want folks thinking that I'd steal.
Losing weight and I'm turning mighty pale. It looks like I've got a tiger.
together again. My tears have stopped falling. The long, lonely nights are now at an end. The key to my heart you hold in your hand, and nothing else matters. We're together again. Love me.
darling.
Before you go, be sure you know how much I love you, and that I'm sorry for the quarrel that we had. If you leave, you're gonna tear my world to pieces. So take it slow, be sure you know before you go. Before you go, be sure you know how much I love you, and that I'm sorry for the quarrel that we had. If you leave, you're gonna tear my world to pieces. So take it slow, be sure you know before you go.
Buck Owens. This is Paul from back with you again tomorrow night, same time, midnight Eastern time. Shows repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. This is Paul from, and you're on the fighting side of me.